नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 9, The Dynasty of Amshuman, Text 3.
Darshayam Asatam Devi, Vasanavara Rasmite, Idyukta Samabip. Prayam Sasham Savanato Nipa Darshayam Asatang Devi Prasanna Varadasmite Idyukta Samabhiprayam Shisham Savanato Nipa Darshayam Asatang Devi Prasanna Varadasmite Idyukta Samabhiprayam Shisham Savanato Nipa
Translation. Thereafter, Mother Ganges appeared before King Bhagiratha and said, I am very much satisfied with your austerities and am now prepared to give you benedictions as you desire. Being thus addressed by Ganga Devi, Mother Ganges, the king bowed his head before her and explained his desire. Purport. The king's desire was to deliver his forefathers, who had been burnt to ashes because of disrespecting Kapila Muni. Om Agana Timadandasya Gananjanashvakaya Chakshan Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare King Bhagiratha has finally achieved a most difficult mission in which two of his ancestors could not fulfill. The problem happened when sons of Maharaj Sagara disrespected Lord Kapiladeva. These sons were searching over the entire world for a horse necessary for a yajna. The horse had been stolen by Indra, who quite often gets envious of anyone trying to make big yajnas because he thinks maybe they'll become more powerful than him. So they searched everywhere for this horse, and they found the horse near the ashram of Kapila Muni. But they didn't know this is Kapila Muni. They thought, here's the horse thief. It all makes sense. The horse is near him in his house. He stole this horse that we've been looking all over the world for. Therefore, it's quite obvious what we should do as Kshatriyas. We should kill him. So all 60,000 sons, we should not be surprised by the Bhagavatam's mentioning that there were 60,000 sons of one of the co-wives of Sagara Maharaj. Everything depends on power and potency. There's so many animals that give birth to so many children. But in the age of Kali, matter loses its potency. Human beings lose their potency. And so, these days, many men are impotent. They can't even have one son because of wasting so much semen in illicit affairs. because of bad living habits, bad diet, bad lifestyle. They can't even have any children. Naturally, such puny entities, when they hear about Maharaj Sagara having 60,000 sons from one wife, they think, oh, fantasy, mythology. But you can just imagine what the Vedic sages might think upon hearing about the details of Kali Yuga. What? A man can't even have a child? This must be mythology. So, these 60,000 sons raise their weapons to attack Kapila Muni. But you cannot attack the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, from within their bodies, the fire that composes all bodies increased the temperature and burnt all of them to ashes. The Prabhupada explains that the body is a combination of different material elements. Fire is one of them. So, by their own bodily heat rising, all 60,000 sons perished, and there was just a big pile of ashes and the horse. So then, a son of Sagara Maharaj from another wife, Amsuman, began to look for the horse, and he came upon the horse and a big stack of ashes. And it was explained to him that these are your brothers, these are the ashes of your brothers, 60,000 of them, from brothers born of the other wife of Sagara Maharaj. And naturally, Amsuman felt a desire. How can I deliver these poor boys? You see, they couldn't recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead due to their immersion in the modes of material nature. Evidently, these 60,000 sons who perished had a solid program of just being caught in the actions and reactions of material nature. So Amsuman, in his prayers to Lord Kapiladeva, explain that point. Someone who is in material existence can only see the actions and reactions of material life. They can only see the actions and reactions of the modes. They can't see anything else. It doesn't make any difference whether they are sleeping or whether they are awake. All they see is the actions and reactions of Trigunamai. Therefore, they could not recognize you, my Lord, who so wonderfully gives the boat, the safe and firm boat of transcendental knowledge in the form of Sankhya Yoga, analyzing the material world to find Vishnu at the root. That is your contribution, my Lord. Amsuman spoke to Kapila Muni. But these brothers of mine, they couldn't recognize you because that's the way it is when you're situated. In the materialistic conception of life, when your standpoint is the materialistic standpoint, even though it may be a good karma standpoint, even though your standpoint may be very civilized according to the standard, the current standard of modern society or past society, still, if you are going to see the Supreme Lord properly, you have to become purified. Otherwise, you'll simply see the actions and reactions of the modes of nature. And even you'll think that Krishna is an ordinary person. That is why when Bhagavan Sri Krishna himself, Swayam Bhagavan, was present in this world 5,000 years ago, very few understood that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't have the vision. And Krishna explains also from his side that Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavrata. I don't allow everybody to see me. I have a curtain of energy that prevents unqualified persons from seeing with me. I'm not going to manifest myself to everyone. This is Krishna's right. Any respectable person doesn't expose himself or herself to everyone. You know how in traditional Indian society, you know, 100 years ago, even if a woman wanted to go across the street to visit her friends, she would not let the sun of day see her. She would go in a palanquin covered by curtains just to go across the street to visit her girlfriend. That was respect. That was the behavior of a respectable person, especially for a lady, you know. I'm not meant for others' eyes to see. Everyone should have a sense of self-respect and self-dignity. When you act in such a way that your sense of self-dignity and respect is trashed, then how can you live life properly? You can't expect others to respect you if you don't respect yourself. Maybe some of you have a car, and you know that if you don't take care of the car and you just let it accumulate a lot of dents and you don't repair little things in the car, gradually you lose respect for the car, even though it's yours. You just don't take care of it because, it's got a dent here, it's got a rip in the fabric there. And so that attitude of, you know, towards the car causes it to accumulate even more wear and tear. Anyone ever had a car they treated like that? What's the use? Okay, it's got a dent. It'll get another dent soon. And anyway, it drives. So you don't have any respect for it. You just, you know, treat it as a thing that's getting you from point A to point B. And as long as it lasts, you'll use it. But otherwise, you don't have any pride in it. But then you've seen others who have respect. Maybe too much respect for their car. It's my treasure. You go to Germany, there they worship cars. You know, because all the motorways in Germany have no speed limit. So you like your car, it's like your Vaikuntha chariot. You know. So everyone's very car conscious there. I mean, the whole point of life is to get on the motorway and, you know, drive at least 160 k's an hour. That won't put you in the fastest lane, though. You'll be in the middle lane at 160. If you want to be in the fast lane, you know, with the Porsches and the fast Mercedes and BMWs, then you've got to do like 180 minimum. So, there they worship their cars. That's where I learned how to drive in Germany. So I was initiated into the sacred cult of car puja, that, you know, your car, you know, you always check everything and always be conscious of every sound, and the car is like a temple. And I did learn some good things from this cult, the German car cult, that it's true. If you let little things go wrong in your car and they start to accumulate, you lose respect for your car, and gradually the whole thing loses value quickly, and you incur major damage because you have this attitude that I just don't care for it, I don't have any respect for it, just my old car, you know, it's no big deal, it's just a, you know, clunker, it gets me from here to there. But if as soon as there's a dent in the car, as soon as there's some little thing wrong, immediately you fix it, you keep that sense of respect for your car. So that's what I learned, and I saw that it was true. And basically, it's about taking the trouble to maintain whatever you have, especially if it's for Krishna's service. If you take the trouble to really take care of what you have, you won't want very much, because it really takes a lot to take care of your things. I found that out yesterday. I thought I was in peaceful Bayswater, and I know there are thieves around. I've heard that there are break-ins in Bayswater, but never did I expect what happened yesterday, you know, at 6:15 in the morning, you know, with somebody in the house, You know, some crims have the nerve to just walk in the house and grab things, you know. You would never expect this. I mean, it was 6:15 in the morning, you know.
Here?
Yeah, no. At Kendra's house. Yeah, you know. With somebody right there. They just walked in and they scooped up all my items and took off, you know. I was mortally wounded because that, you know, mainly because I'm on my computer is all my hearing and chanting, all my recordings of devotees, you know, speaking Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavad Gita. I took my Apple iPod, you know, which is like a godsend for devotees. You can load it up. It's a little thing. You can load it up with like 3 gigabytes worth of hearing and chanting. So that's what saves me on plane trips. I can just listen to Prabhupada, you know, listen to someone reading teachings of Lord Chaitanya or Nectar of Devotion and like that. I took my cell phone, my 3-band cell phone. It can handle any frequency in the world. I took my digital camera. Taking devotional shots of temples and devotees. So I made quite a heist. And of course they took some cash and took all my cash and all my documents and all my plastic. So I just thought, well, that's the end of that. You know, what can be done? You know, who would have expected such a thing to happen? I couldn't blame Seva Kunj. I mean, you know, who would have thought, you know? I mean, just the house, the door of the house is behind trees. You know, to really, you know. Of course, when you're a thief, you're looking for opportunity. Just like if you're a lusty person, you know, oh, yes, this is a good one for me. So it's just a different vision that we don't have. We have the vision to be alert for Krishna's service. A devotee is always alert for more opportunities to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When a devotee loses that vision, then you know you've slipped. When the devotee's vision starts to become dull, maybe like a batsman in cricket who no longer can see the ball, you know, then you're of no value. Your vision starts to get off of it. So, a devotee always has a keen eye. Where is there a service opportunity? What more can I do for Krishna? That is evidence that the devotee is on the right track for stimulating his original love for Krishna. So these crims, who could have thought, you know, who would have thought, you know? You never thought such a thing, would you, Vani Vani? I mean, you know, you know there are break-ins here, but, you know, something so brazen, like 6:15 in the morning, daylight, you know, with somebody in the house, you know. But the police said, sometimes they'll look and see if you're in the back of your house doing gardening, and they'll just come right in the front door. So I guess it's not really classified as a burglary, it's like a home invasion, isn't it? Yeah. So we don't have such things in the States because, you know, everybody carries a gun in the States. There's no such, that word home invasion doesn't exist in American vocabulary because you break in someone's home, you know, while they're there. And according to law, they have the right to blow you away. And, you know, there'll be no charges filed. You are trespassing. There was a case, famous case a few years ago of a Japanese tourist in some rural town in Louisiana, southern part of the USA, and he was evidently trying to get directions or something, and he went up to someone's door and, you know, the person, you know, shot them dead. The person generally explained, I thought this was a marauder. I didn't know who this was. I thought this was an attacker, and no charges were filed. So there's no such thing as home invasion in the USA, you know, because no crib would dare, you know. You know, the burglaries, that's when no one's there. But, you know, to walk into a homeowner's place while somebody's there is like the criminal's inviting death. You just don't know, what, you know, whether the homeowner is packing a pistol or a semi-automatic or a machine gun. You just don't know. Anything's possible. It's all legal, you know. So anyway, I was thinking, oh, well, that's, yeah, what can I do, you know. it's just obviously an attack by Maya, and it's life in this world. You're going to incur some damage. But I said, oh, well, all my hearing and chanting is gone. That was what I lamented the most. More than losing a bundle of cash and all the documents. How can I live without my hearing and chanting? And then meanwhile, in the midst of all this, because I had been peacefully chanting japa in the temple room when, the news came. So then I immediately had to go over there to the house, and I put my beads down, and amidst all the hubbub, I couldn't remember where I put my beads. So that became the paramount anxiety, not even more than losing all those things. Like, where are my beads? I can't chant Hare Krishna. So it was amazing how devotees have different perspectives on loss. I was lamenting, oh, my hearing and chanting facilities are gone. Now I can't find my japa beads. Then I found my other passport, my New Zealand passport with my Indian visa. They left that. Oh, so good. Go to the Holy Dom. So devotees just look at the world differently. Of course, I was very angry. They had taken Krishna's Lakshmi, all the Lakshmi that temples give for my airfare. They just clipped all that. What could I do? I never expected such a brazen attack. So then I was sitting on the couch, and it was about 2 hours later, and of course the police had come. We gave them a police report, and the police of course said, good luck if you ever see this again, just forget about it. Then the phone rings. It's the police. We have your stuff. We've apprehended the crims. What? I couldn't believe it. So we had to get in the car and drive over to, where is it? Near? Yeah. And, the police very proudly escorted us into their private area, and there was the stuff all laid out on the floor. We said, well, how did you do it? Wanted to, inspire them and, give them a chance to recount their glories. We were driving along the road, and we had given them a report. Dhriti had seen the car, that getaway car. So she had given them a report. It was a black Civic Honda with a spoiler. I was a bit impressed. I never knew that women knew what a spoiler was. That's the first thing I thought when I heard her say that. Oh, wait a minute, a woman knows what a spoiler is? So, anyway, it wasn't even that car that they were in that the police apprehended. It was a total, the police said it was a fluke. We know it was Krishna's arrangement. Police car was driving in that area and noticed a car weaving, not keeping a straight line. And of course, being Western Australia, the police looked in the car as it was weaving and saw that, there's a certain kind of people in that car. Definitely pull them over. The police followed them, motioned them to get over, and the car wouldn't get over. So the police said, now we were really suspicious, the car won't pull over. And same time, the car wouldn't pull away. So, and into a mad pursuit. It didn't force the police into a mad pursuit. Oh, and then finally the car pulls over and all the occupants jump out and start running. And immediately the police said, oh, they're stolen goods in that car. That's why they're taking off. So he corralled most of them. So then they, confiscated all the contents of the car. And, they had heard the police report about the break-in, so they knew. They put one and one together, and so they called me over and said, we've got your stuff. Come identify it, And so while I was identifying the stuff, they kept asking me, well, this is really flash, isn't it? This is really expensive, because they wanted, high prices so they could make the charges really big. I don't know what the laws in Australia, in the States, like petty theft is no big deal, but if it goes over a certain amount, then they can really slam you. Is that what it is here, too? Anyway, they go, how much is the value? He says, I'm higher, higher. They really want to get these guys. They all come, are you sure? This looks really flash to me. Or maybe it impresses the judge or something if they bring up that, you know, this is back not any little nickel and this is not any little, you know, 10-cent escapade. This is a, you know, big theft. Is that what they do? Yeah, so they, you know, you sure? Looks more expensive than that to me. So anyway, by the time we finished, we had calculated about $8,000, $8,000 Australian. They were satisfied with that. And so, so then I was, as I was leaving, you know, I thanked the policeman very much. He was the young guy. He was really beaming, like, yeah, you know, we've done, you know, this will look great in my record. I guess that's what he's thinking. You know, this will really look good in my file. So I, you know, I thanked him. I said, you know, I can appreciate good law enforcement work, you know. I said, most of my relatives in the state, you know, work, you know, they're ranking officers in the New York City Police Department. And so the guy looked at me. Yeah, it's all right, you know. He said, the Aussies will take care of you. So, you know, that is life in this world, that there's always gain and loss, but we have to make sure that we're centered upon Krishna. Otherwise, we'd lose our sanity in this world. It's constant loss, constant gain. And actually, during the whole affair, I was thinking of our devotee, Mother Sujirani, and how sudden loss, according to theft, is also like a sudden attack on your health. These things just come out of nowhere. And you know, that's part of living in this world. Mm-hmm. Your possessions can go in a second. Your health can go in a second. That's why whenever people tell me, how is your health? I say, it's all right for the moment. Because, you know, the end is obvious. Health will diminish. You will lose your health. So I was thinking about Mother Sujirani all the time. That, you know, what is this situation compared to, you know, what she's going through? So, I was talking to Burijan Prabhu later, and he was explaining how the Buddhists, they say that loss of possessions is like a small death. For those who identify with their possessions and for those who identify with their body, losing possessions, you know, is a little bit like losing your body. Both, you know, aham mameti, I am this body, whatever is in relation to this body is mine. So, losing possessions is like a small death. Because the body is also a possession. So when you lose possessions or when they're stolen, you get some idea what it's like, how attached you're going to feel when you lose your body, when your body is demanded of you. You know, in the sixth canto, the story of the demigods asking the sage Dadichi for his body in order to make a thunderbolt weapon to kill Vritrasura. So, just to test them, Dadichi, you know, didn't agree. The demigods were instructed, go see Dadichi, ask for his body. And so they did, but Dadichi just wanted to stimulate, he wanted to cause to happen a dialogue about Dharma. So when they asked him for his body, he said, how can you ask someone for their body? There's nothing more dear to the person than the body. Don't you know that? Don't you know about the pain of death? Death means when your body is separated from the soul. How could you put somebody through that? I can't give you my body. He said that just to test them. But actually, Dadichi was such an extraordinary sage. Oh, you want my body? Basically, his attitude was take it, because those who refuse to sacrifice their body for the welfare of others, he said, are very miserable. They're very hard creatures. Those who refuse to use their body for the welfare of others are very horrible entities. So in this way, Dadichi gave them his body, and the demigods made a thunderbolt out of it to kill Vritrasura. So this situation caused me to reflect. The situation yesterday caused me to reflect upon the complications of living in this world. Amshuman, he had to deal with complications, something his brothers did. And now Amshuman was trying to rectify the situation, so he's offering prayers to Lord Kapila. Please, you know, can you let my brothers come back to life? And Kapila Muni said, the only way that happens is, that can happen, is if Ganges water, the river Ganges is brought here, that'll take care of it. Then they'll come back to life. So Amshuman tried. He could not succeed in his lifetime to bring the river Ganges to that area. And then his son, Dilipa, tried. And in his lifetime, he could not achieve the goal. Finally, you're at the point of Bhagiratha, King Bhagiratha. He performed severe austerities, and he succeeded in bringing the Ganges. Ganga Devi appeared before him, and that's what you're hearing today. I'm very much satisfied with your austerities, and am now prepared to give you benedictions as you desire. We should understand that our life is built on a foundation of yajna, jnana, tapa. This is explained by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter. Yajna, dana, tapa, karma, nachajam, karyamevata. The Lord explains that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are never to be given up. Krishna explains it. These things purify even the great souls. We have to look in our life and check these indexes. It's like in the newspapers, they have the financial indexes, you know, the charts and statistics from the stock share market and, you know, economic indicators. So what are the indicators in our life that we should check? Yajna, dana, tapa. How much sacrifice is there in our life? Yajna. How much dana, how much charity are we giving? And tapa, how much austerity is there? Then we can get some idea whether we're on the right track or not. In Kali Yuga, the only yajna that works is the Sankirtan yajna. Therefore, we have to look in our life and see how much Sankirtan is there. Congregational glorification of the Lord. Then, look for the dana, charity. We were speaking last night about how, especially for householders, giving charity is very important. Householders who do not give charity are in a very condemned situation. You can give charity not simply money, in the form of money, but you can also give in terms of time. Because as they say in the Western world, time is money. But there has to be some kind of charity in your life. And then tapa, austerity, voluntarily accepting inconvenience for a higher purpose. That has to be there in your life too. People will voluntarily accept inconvenience. They'll go to school or TAFE, for example, in order to get, you know, better situated in the future. But why don't we voluntarily accept some inconvenience for the sake of stimulating our original love for Krishna? Please remember this. Yajna, dana, tapa, karma, nachajam, karyam, evata. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are never to be given up. These acts purify even a great soul. So you see, Krishna consciousness is not sentimental. It has some very necessary ingredients. It's like our chef Kurma knows that certain cooking thing, ingredients are essential. You just can't do without them. Other things, they're optional. But he knows when he cooks, there has to be certain basics there. Otherwise, forget. Other, there may be some exotic spices available. That's nice. But if not, okay, as long as certain basics are there. So Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, these things have to be there in your life, even if you're a great soul. These things purify even the great souls. Yajna, dana, tapa. Sacrifice, charity, and austerity. Now, Ganga Devi is satisfied by King Bhagiratha, and therefore, she's saying, ask whatever benediction you want. And so the king bows his head respectfully and is going to explain his desire that he wanted to deliver his forefathers who had been burnt to ashes because of disrespecting Kapila Muni. They were standing right before the Supreme Personality of God and they couldn't recognize him. They thought he was a horse thief. They're standing before Kapila Muni, the expounder of Sankhya, and they thought he was a horse thief. This is how crazy life in this world gets. This is how deluded someone can become. And Krishna doesn't hide this. He doesn't cover up that this tendency happens in the world. He explains it. Tribhya gunamayir bhavaya. What's the next line? A-B. Avi Sarvam Idam Jagat. Krishna says the whole world is bewildered by Trigunamayi, the three modes of material nature, so they don't recognize me. It's like if you wrote a book and explained how people misunderstand you, how they don't really know who you are. No one likes to be misunderstood. No one likes to be miscast, misperceived. So Krishna, he's a supreme person. He doesn't like it. So in Bhagavad Gita, he says, they're looking at me in the wrong way. They don't understand me. They think that first there was the impersonal, then there's me, the person. They have all these crazy ideas. Anyway, Bhagiratha is very merciful upon his forefathers. He wants to deliver them. And so he's successfully propitiated Ganga Devi, and now she's asking, please explain. Please tell me your desire. Huh? Any questions? Yes.
I was thinking it must have been in between the time 60,000 sons were burned and liberated. So that like two generations. So in previous ages, obviously that was longer than lifetimes now.
Those living entities, the spirit souls that were 60,000 sons, what situation would they have been in? I mean, there's no mention of that. No, there's no mention of that. We can only speculate. Who can say? You do hear information about another son of Sagara Maharaj named, I forgot his name, but anyway. In his previous life, the Bhagavatam says, this son was a great mystic yogi, but due to bad association, he fell down. So therefore, he took birth in the royal family as a son of the king. And he was a jati smara. He could remember his past life. So he was very determined to stay out of any kind of material entanglement this time, just as Judd Bharat was. So he just acted like an avadut, irrespective of all social conventions. Even he's playing with his playmates, and he would take his mates and drown them in a pond. Just so people would not think he's a normal person, they'd leave him alone. And of course, naturally, the people were very upset that their sons were, you know, had been drowned, you know, by their playmate. So his father, in that way, gave up all attachment for him. I mean, if you had a son who drowned all his playmates in the pond, you'd probably give up attachment for the son. So that was, you know, this is all the plot of the son. I don't want my father attached to me. I don't want anybody attached to me. I just want to wander free so I can focus on the Supreme Personality of God. So his father said, okay, you got to leave. So before the son left, with his mystic power, he brought all the dead playmates back to life. So all the people were like, wow, what kind of son is this? But he was gone. Well, that much we do know about the past life of that son. There's so much in Bhagavatam. We can wonder about so many things, but we have enough information given to keep us occupied for all our life. Anything else? Yes?
Sometimes you can perform devotional service, but when you're feeling blissful, but you're not necessarily thinking of Krishna. So, how
are you blissful and not think of Krishna? How's that possible? If you're doing service, you must be thinking of Krishna. You see, thinking of how to do the service nicely is also thinking of Krishna. Thinking of the details of execution, that's also thinking of Krishna. If you chanted nice japa in the morning, it's very easy to remember who you're doing the service for during the day. So when you pay attention to the details of your service, how to do it nicely, you're meditating on Krishna. That's why in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when the verse is there, always think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. This is the essence, conclusion of all Vedic knowledge. In the purport, Prabhupada talks about book distribution. He says, when you're selling Krishna's books, then naturally you're thinking, you know, about Krishna. How this person can get Krishna's glories. So therefore, he also said, book distribution, it's samadhi. That service so effectively fixes your mind at Krishna's lotus feet. Hare Krishna, all glories to the Prabhupada.